Good morning. Open your Bibles to the epistle of 1 John. I don't know what you were doing about 6:19 this morning after a night of storms and sirens and whatever, but I was still in bed. Steve called and said, that sermon you're working on for July while I'm going to Zim, can you get it ready for this morning? Because I'm in the ER with stomach pains. So I have wrote it and I have read through it twice before this morning. So it is raw, unfinished, unpolished. I don't know how long it's going to last. I haven't timed it. So bear with me. By the way, during the break I did text Sandy and she said Steve was in ultrasound at that time. So that's what we'll know about him. The idea for this lesson came from a book I was asked to read. It's not the main theme of the book, but some comments in the book made me think of our united theme for this year. So before I turn to 1 John, let me read two verses from John chapter 13. And we'll come back to these a little later on. Jesus said to his disciples, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." And we'll look at these verses again in a few minutes. So keep them in mind as we proceed. Now, in 1 John. 1 John chapter 2, we'll start reading in verse 9. "He who says he is in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there's no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he's going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes." The main point we want to get from these verses and from the others we'll look at here is our love for our brothers. Albert Barnes notes in his commentary that the word brother here seems to refer to those who profess the same religion. Sometimes it's used in a much broader sense, but here it appears to be that which would be love among Christians. So we want to use it that way this morning. Love for one another, and especially love for our fellow Christians here at Eastside. I'd like to go back to Barnes for another definition. Twice in this reading, in verse 9 and in verse 11, the phrase is used, "hates his brother." And Barnes says that the word used here in this connection includes both the mere absence of love as well as positive hatred. It's designed to include the whole of that state of mind where there's not love for brothers. So John is not just saying it's bad if you actively hate someone gathered here this morning, but the mere absence of love, the state of mind where there's not active love for one another. So now if we know who's being talked about, us, and what is being discussed, that is active love for one another, what does John say about that, where it's missing? Well, John says, we're fooled. We think we're in the light, but really in darkness. So hold your place here in 1 John for a minute and flip over to the Gospel of John, chapter 1. Gospel of John, chapter 1. These are familiar verses. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it." Verse 9, that was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. Jesus says in John 8:12 and in John 9:5 that he is the light of the world. But look back here in John 1 at verse 5. The light shines in darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. So just as light overcomes darkness, we turn on a light in a room and it overcomes the darkness in the room. Jesus came as light to get rid of darkness. But that didn't happen in verse 5. We think of comprehend to mean to understand. But here in this verse, it means to receive or to admit or to let in, to let the light in. The darkness will not admit the light in verse 5. So that is why we claim or pretend to love others in the assembly. We're still in darkness. We haven't let the light in. Remember that hate is the absence of love. So the absence of love for one another is the absence of light, and we're still in darkness. And walking with blinded eyes, John says. So now I go back to 1 John, this time to chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. Verse 10, in this the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he who does not love his brother. For this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. So here we have a contrast between the children of God and the children of the devil. You say, well, I know which one I am. Well, let's read on. He who does not practice righteousness is not of God, this passage says. So why do we say a doctor practices medicine? Why do we say an attorney practices law? Well, it's because of their continual action of learning more and adding to their skills. So how do we practice righteousness? Well, by the same manner, by continual learning action, without which we're not of God, verse 10. So now look at the next phrase in verse 10. Nor is he who does not love his brother. So who's the child of the devil? He does not practice righteousness, or he who does not love his brother. Who's the child of God? He who does practice righteousness and loves his brother. So it's one way or the other. Let's read a little more in John chapter 3, verse 14. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. He who does not love his brother abides in death. Whoever hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or tongue, but in deed and in truth. I'd like to talk about several points in these verses, like in verse 16, how do we know love? Well, because of what Christ did for us, we know love, and we ought to be able to lay down our lives for the brethren. That's pretty strong. Move down to verse 18. What is John saying, verse 18? There's more to loving each other than just saying we do. If you need anything, let me know. Or call me if I can help. I'm here for you. Well, sure, if it's some of my friends, I'll check on them and I'll help. But how about that sister that's sitting all the way across the auditorium that I haven't spoken to in months? Oh, not intentionally. It just hadn't been convenient and I haven't spoken. If it's my turn to send food to the sick, I'll run by and pick up a cup of Cokes and a pack of cookies. John is pointing a finger at us when he says to love one another in deed and in truth. Maybe these verses from James will make it a little clearer. Listen to the difference between saying and doing. If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace and be warmed and be filled, but you don't give them the things they needed for the body, what does it profit? There's several more verses in 1 John I'd like to explore, but for the sake of time, look at chapter 4, 1 John 4. I'll be reading in verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another. For the love of God and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. And this, the love of God, was manifested toward us, that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. And this is love. Not that we loved God, but he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. Remember, God didn't just love with words. He loved by sending us his Son. So ought we to love one another. Now turn to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22. It's a familiar passage here with the lawyer tempting Jesus, asking him about the greatest commandment. Matthew 22, verse 36. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. So is there any doubt that Jesus would give this, as the first and great commandment? In the law of Moses, devotion and total submission to God is the very beginning of the Ten Commandments. Think about what's in Exodus 20. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Shall not make yourself any carved images. Shall not bow down or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Not take the name of your Lord your God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But here in Matthew 22, Jesus doesn't quote this list from Exodus chapter 20. Rather, he uses the word love. And lest that take care of how we serve and honor God. That's what the lawyer asked for. What's the greatest commandment in the law? But our point is actually in what Jesus added on to it. Verse 39. And the second is like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. Love your neighbor as yourself. Before we talk about that for a minute, I'd like to look at this little phrase in verse 39. And the second is like it. The second commandment, how is it like the first? Well, it also requires love. Someone has said that the second was so close to the first one, Jesus couldn't give the first one without giving the second one. They're that intertwined. They're that close. The commentator named John Gill, he says, for though the object is different, yet this commandment regards love just as the former and requires that it be true, hearty, sincere, and perfect, that it be with singleness of heart always to all men, that it spring forth from love of God and perform to his glory. That's how we should love our neighbor, as we love God. So to continue this thought of loving your neighbor, go over to Luke chapter 10. Where another lawyer is questioning Jesus and trying to trap him in this similar fashion. This lawyer wants Jesus to identify who is my neighbor, which brings us to the parable we normally call the Good Samaritan. And you know the parable. A man is beaten and robbed and left on the road, and Levi and the priest walk by, leaving him there. The man who stopped took care of him at his own time, at his own expense, was a Samaritan. So when Jesus asked the lawyer at the end of it, who was the neighbor in the story, the lawyer didn't say the Samaritan. He said, the one who helped him. So the same question for us. Who is my neighbor? Who is your neighbor? People next door? People across the street? The ones on the pew next to me, in front of me, or behind me? What was Jesus' point? What was the relationship between the Jews and the Samaritans? The Jews going from Galilee to Judea would go across the Jordan and around Samaria, not go through it. That's why the woman at the well, surprised when Jesus asked her for water, she says, why are you a Jew asking me for water, a Samaritan? In John 8:48, when they wanted to deride Jesus and call him an ugly name, what did they call him? You're a Samaritan, and you have a demon. If the Samaritan in Jesus' parable represented the one it's been said the Jews hated, if that's my neighbor, it seems we need to expand our definition of who my neighbor is. Maybe it's the guy next door who you haven't spoken to in a long time because he made you mad one time. Or maybe it's the guy you see at Bojangles, so you would walk out a different door and walk a long way around to your car because you don't walk by and speak to him. Or maybe it's someone in the assembly that you could walk around rather than going by and speaking to him. So you get the point. You can fill in the blank who your Samaritan neighbor is. Jesus said, you are to love this person just as you love yourself. Bang. Kind of gets you right in the middle, doesn't it? How are you going to love that Samaritan neighbor? Just as you love yourself. John Gill, the commentator I mentioned earlier, put it like this. In temporal things, or earthly things, do them all the good that you can, and do no injury to their person or property. That's how you treat the neighbor, your Samaritan neighbor. And in spiritual things, pray for them, instruct them, advise as if they were your own soul or your near and dearest relative. This is to be extended to every man, though the Jews restrained it to their friends and companions and ones of their own religion. The Jews wouldn't treat the Samaritans like the neighbor that Jesus was teaching. We got to be better than the Jews. In spiritual matters, pray for them, instruct them, advise them as you would yourself. You know, that sounds like I might need to speak to the guy I haven't spoken to for years. I'll mention evangelism a little later. We're talking about evangelism here at Eastside. But maybe the best place for my evangelism to start is that neighbor, my Samaritan neighbor, that I don't like. So, we looked at our brothers and how we ought to love them, love one another. We looked at love for our neighbors, and I say add a little more to it, go to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and we'll start reading in verse 43. Matthew 5:43. You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. I thought about how to try to illustrate or describe this. In the very early days of my life, you might call an enemy a dirty Jap because our country's enmity with the Japanese during World War II. Or during the Cold War, you might say he's a dirty communist, referring to our relationship with the USSR. Some guys my age fought the Viet Cong and Vietnamese War. But we don't have any open conflicts like that now, thankfully, well, maybe except in Afghanistan. But we may face those who would do us harm in a less violent way. I'd like you to listen to what Albert Barnes said about this verse. Two kinds of love. He said there are two kinds of love involving the same general feeling or springing from the same fountain of goodwill to all mankind, but different still in far as it, to admit the separation of an idea. Same, but two. The one is the feeling by which we approve of the conduct of another, which is commonly called the love of complacency. The other, by which we wish well to the person of another, though we cannot approve their conduct. See the difference? One, we approve the conduct, well, the other, we approve the person, but not the conduct. This is the love of benevolence. This is the love we're to bear toward our enemies. It is impossible to love the conduct of a man who curses and reviles us and enters our persons or property, or that violates all the laws of God. But though we may hate his conduct and feel deeply that we're affected by it, yet we are still to wish that person well. We may pity his madness and his folly. We may speak kindly of, but we may speak kindly of him, and to him may not return evil for evil. We may aid him in the time of trial, seek to do him good here, and to promote his eternal welfare. Love your brother. You don't like may be hard. Loving your Samaritan neighbor who did you wrong may be harder. But loving the person who would do you harm is nonetheless what Christ commands us to do. So now let's go back to the verse I read in the beginning, John 13, verses 34 and 35. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. In what way? Whoops. In what way was this a new commandment? Jesus said, a new commandment I give you. What way was it new? Well, there are varying opinions on it. It's the first time that people were told to be distinguished or recognized as a people because they love one another. They were not to be known for their wealth, for their warfare, maybe in the Old Testament, but for their genuine care and concern for one another. They were, and we are, to deny ourselves to promote the welfare of one another. But I really believe Jesus' phrase, as I have loved you, maybe what makes it new. There's now a higher standard. It's more than just self-love or casual love for one another. We're now to have a self-abandoning or a self-sacrificing love based on Jesus' example and his love for all of us. The motive for our love has changed. Now we love in a way that imitates Christ. Somebody has said the lack of love among Christians is a glaring weakness of faith today. Ephesians chapter 5 says, therefore be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also loved us and has given himself for us. I'd like to set aside for just a minute what I've said so far and share with you another thought. And I'll try to tie them together in just a minute. I mentioned earlier I was asked to read a book a few months ago, not something I would have read on my own, but I read it because of the request. Here's a quote from page 267 in that book. Quote, "The vast majority of people who've ever been baptized by our people are our own offspring. We've never been very evangelistic in terms of people who weren't those to whom we gave birth. Most of the people we baptize are our own offspring. We're not evangelistic other than those we give birth." What do you think about that statement? Is it true? Over the past 5 or 10 or 15 years, have most of the baptisms at Eastside been our family members? How about most of the congregations in Limestone County? Now, if you go to Zimbabwe or Guatemala or other places that we're familiar with, I'm sure that's not true, but how about us around here? Now, let me hasten to add, I am thrilled when we have taught our children and they become responsible and make the great decision to obey and follow Christ. I'm not knocking that at all. This author goes on a little later on and talks about the religious landscape in America. When given a survey to check a box next to your religious choice, your religious affiliation, more and more are going to the bottom and checking none of the above. They've even given them a nickname called the nuns. N-O-N-E-S. 23% of the Americans are nuns, no religious affiliation. That's 56 million people. If you look at the younger group, the millennials, 44% check none of the above. This author quotes from another article that says, "Millennials are walking away from the faith they grew up with in record numbers." So, how does this tie back to our lesson this morning? Well, first, let me tell you this. The quote that I gave you earlier about baptizing our own offspring came from Dr. Al Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. But I still think it's worth us thinking about for us. 56 million Americans with no religious affiliation. What have we talked about in our lesson? Jesus' new commandment to love one another. Love your brothers, love your neighbor, love your enemy. Jesus said, "If you love me, you'll keep my commandments." And those commandments include making disciples and teaching the newly converted. Not just our children so we can baptize our offspring, but your neighbor, yeah, your Samaritan neighbor, and your enemy. This is a lesson on whom we should love. I don't want to lose that main point. But let's apply it directly to the evangelistic efforts going on here at Eastside. Do you have a neighbor that needs to be taught? Seriously. So often I sit right here, and this point is made from this pulpit. I just let it bounce off. So what am I going to do about it? Do you remember Christ's commission to his disciples? Go, teach, baptize, teach some more. Does that apply any less to us? Not just sending thousands of dollars a year to other people to preach. That's absolutely part of it. But when will I take it personally? Some of you have embraced this. I fear many of us may be lacking. Lacking in the true love for our brothers, our neighbors, and even our enemies. I thank you for your patience this morning. This was not finished. It's kind of rough, but maybe you got the point. This morning, Christ extends his invitation to you. If you're not a Christian, to come to him. If you know what you need to do for that, we invite you to come. And if anything else we can do to help you out this morning, please come as we stand and sing.